And remembering a little bit that last time we shared together that a person is either consuming or being consumed. And that's true for the world and for bad guys and good guys. It's what's either the environment and their lifestyle, they are on top and gobbling everything up in power, politic, and everything. Or they're being eaten up by it and governed and guided by something and someone else, but not for the good. So now, then we share together, we need to be very conscious biblically of that truth. And Israel, remember, did not want to be delivered. They did not want to be rescued from Egypt. And we shared that together. They were settled on the fact that they were comfortable where they were. And we reminded ourselves in Exodus 1 and in verse 13 that the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. Rigor is the word oppression, to be oppressed, to be bruised, to be crushed. And they made their lives, verse 14, bitter. They made their lives bitter, and that's a verb. It means their service, their bondage was bitter. Very strong, a lot of oomph to it. So what they had to do, they were forced to do with great vigor, oppression. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. Back to the word rigor again, oppression. So now the reason we remind ourselves of that was their life. And they've got 400 years of this. And it was normal. God was going to rescue them out of bondage, out of this condition. And they wanted the condition changed, but they didn't want it changed by God, for God, to get to God. That they didn't want. And if you're wondering why in the tribulation coming up and all kinds of things changing in our society, you would say, well, boy, a lot of people want to get saved, you'd think. No, they'd like things different. They're glad for the gas price, oil being down. Oh, that's good. And for that, as the world and terrorists and all of that stuff, increases and unknown, who knows what corner of the city, what corner of the anywhere they're going to pop out and do whatever. You don't know. And with all of that stuff, you would think you would want to have some place that you could lock onto mentally that was safe and sound. But it isn't going to be with God. Why not? No more than the Israelites wanted to get out of Egypt. God, we don't mind. If I come to you, I have to recognize and realize that I'm nothing to what I think I am. That is, I'm a sinner, and I have no righteousness. I have no credentials. I have nothing. And I must be totally dependent upon you. That is unacceptable. That's unacceptable. Now, I just say that so you can see. Here's Israel, and you'd think, well, boy, yeah, you'd want to have something good, but not with God. And they didn't want that, remember, all the way down the line. And in the process, God tried to help them in all kinds of ways. Once they crossed the Red Sea, And in doing so, they were given the first month, 30 days, in the land without any help except, you know, God. They had to fend for themselves. They were used to taking care of themselves, and they did that. But as the 30 days moved on, they were running out of their supplies. They were running out of their food, etc. And they had to realize where they were. There were no grocery stores like in Egypt. There were no gardens to go and plunder. There was nothing there. Just death. That's all. They have to look to God. And God waited 30 days so that they would realize that where they were in the wilderness of Sinai, they could not be there apart from God. They'd never make it apart from God. You can never enjoy being saved apart from God. All of the benefits when you believed on the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior are totally dependent on God. For 1 second, you're not even 1 second, you're totally dependent. Israel had to learn that from a physical standpoint in the wilderness. And in the process, God gave them manna on the and they were under that, as we shared together. For 39 years and 11 months, they lived on manna and other things, but they had manna. And thus in the process, but they never liked manna. They didn't like manna. They had it because it was such a super-duper food, but they didn't like it. And so God's care for them, God's amazing, gracious, merciful care for them, would blow your mind away how they kept, as we shared recently on Sunday and all that. In every way, the shoe never wore out, the foot never got sore, you never got sick, you never had a problem anywhere. Wow. So now, having all of that care and all of that keeping, and they were never happy out there in the wilderness for all those years, and God tried to help them, but they didn't learn. So they had got out of Egypt, but Egypt hadn't got out of them. And therefore, they're in the middle of the wilderness, but their mind and their heart, even when, remember, Moses is up in the people go to search out the land, the 12 Israelites, and in the process, they ultimately were not happy, and later on, as you would see, Moses went up to the mountain. God wasn't. It looked like Moses was gone, and where is he? And make us another leader, and that's what they wanted—another leader. So, in all the different occasions, they always demonstrated Egypt in their heart, and therefore they couldn't enjoy all that they were having, and they didn't. And to find thanksgiving for 40 years is very hard. When you have everything, you would think there would have been thanksgiving. But it wasn't there. Now, so in the process of all of that movement, if you would, in looking at it, consumed and being consumed, and Egypt, since Egypt hadn't got out, Egypt hadn't got out of their heart. That's why they had no heart for God. And thus they were being consumed by what? God's grace and mercy. They should have been able to enjoy what God's grace and mercy was and was doing, but they couldn't, because Egypt in their heart was controlling their mind and their heart and consuming them. It took precedent over all that they were having practically in front of them. Their mind and heart longed for Egypt and the things of Egypt and the ways of Egypt, and it was very hard for them. So now, in the process, did they learn anything about God's wonderful grace that God meant them to be, have the advantage, to have the edge, to be the consumer, not consumed, to be the consumer. Now, so with that in mind, we'll take a look, if we can, at Israel in a little different way to try to get the point that was pretty there, if anyone wanted to catch it. Exodus chapter 3. In Exodus chapter 3. And you would note, remember, at Moses is 80 years old. And Moses has gone, without turning there, well, you're right next to it, so why not? Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2. Moses went and had killed an Egyptian who was hurting a Hebrew, etc. And in the process, two Hebrews spotted him, chapter 2, verse 13, and the two men said, "Are you going to kill us?" They were fighting, and Moses said, "What are you fighting among yourselves for?" And thus, Moses was figured, he was spotted, he was tagged of killing an Egyptian to protect an Israelite, Hebrew. And in the process, he fled. And the end of verse 14, and Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." And Pharaoh heard this thing, and he sought to slay him. Now, Moses was consumed. Before that, Moses was right up with Pharaoh as a son, as it were. And Moses consumed all the benefits of Egypt. Egypt was at Moses' feet, at Pharaoh's feet. But now, these 40 years, Moses is being consumed. And he had to run away and hide up there. God allowed it and worked it out. But he had to go and hide, and he's afraid. And that's where he lived. Hopefully Pharaoh can't find me up here out in the Midian on the desert, which is not likely. And so therefore Moses, you're up there, and the circumstances have consumed you. Are you enjoying being Pharaoh's son? Nope. Are you enjoying being a Hebrew? Nope. Are you enjoying anything? Nope. Because I'm out there with a few sheep. My father Jethro, and I'm out there. So now, Exodus chapter 3, what do we have? Well, we have God, remember, Moses is 80 years old, and God deals with his heart at the burning bush, same old path he's done how many times for 40 years with his sheep. And this time, the bush was burning, he stopped, remember? I'll read it, verse 2, chapter 3, verse 2. And the angel of the Lord appeared, the pre-incarnate Christ, unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. A phenomenon, something, an oddity that was not answerable. And Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here am I." And he said, verse 5, "Draw not near hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is its holy ground." It's holy ground. So I want you to know, Moses, that you are in the presence of God. God introduced himself there, and the ground where that bush and that ground, because God was there, was holy. And Moses had to take off his shoes and realize that he was standing in a very, very special spot. He could have stood there 1,000 times in 40 years. But this time, God was there. So now, having said that little bit, Moses was afraid. But now, Moses, you aren't afraid. No, God has captured me. Here I am, God, and God is greater than anything in my little head and heart, and God captures the heart, and God consumes the heart of Moses. How so? What changes? Well, Moses is sent to Pharaoh, remember? And God sends Moses to Pharaoh. And in the process, what are you going to find? Well, Moses, going to Pharaoh, is going to find oppression. Over to chapter 7 of Exodus. Exodus chapter 7. Moses is being consumed. Now Moses is the consumer. He represents God. And therefore, everything out here, he's a winner, no matter how Moses goes. He's a consumer. He's going to consume everything, including Pharaoh. And in the process, you'll remember and recall chapter 7, and picking up, if I can, in verse 9. And when Pharaoh shall speak unto you, 7:9, show a miracle for you. He's going to ask for a miracle. Then thou shalt say unto Aaron, take thy rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent. And Moses and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh, and they did so as the Lord had commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. And then Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers and the magicians of Egypt, and they did like manner with their enchantments, and they cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents also. So we've got how many wise, all the leaders, counselors for Pharaoh, they all have serpents on the ground. Moses is one against many. Verse 12. And they cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. So now see, I told you, wherever Moses goes, he's going to win. He's looking to God. He lost, but he had his whole lifestyle. But now he's in a whole different world. And in the greatest opposition, opponents, obstacles, no more a problem, because we're going to look to God. And we're a consumer. We ought to be consumed. We're to be go forward and in the will of God, for God and His glory and honor. And that's what we're to do successfully. So now, having said that, and here are all these serpents that were consumed by Moses' serpent. And that certainly would impress somebody, but it didn't impress Pharaoh. Verse 13, for his heart was hard. His heart got harder and harder and harder. So now, in Exodus and in chapter 12, Exodus chapter 12, and in Pharaoh, and remember, Pharaoh doesn't change, but Moses, who was afraid of Pharaoh 40 years ago, isn't afraid anymore. And he's going there to confront Pharaoh in a very big time way. So it isn't just like a little thing. It's a big thing. And Moses is going, and he's going as a winner. He's going as a consumer. And in the process, Pharaoh's going to get hard and hard. And every time, all the miracles, but Pharaoh's heart gets harder until the death of the firstborn, chapter 12, verse 29. And it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on the throne, his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. So the first calf, the first goat, the first everything died. All died. Now, and God did in his plague, 10th plague, and in the process. And so Pharaoh quits. Instead of trying to consume Moses, which he wasn't doing, he wasn't winning. Say it another way. Egypt wasn't beating Moses. The world wasn't winning over Moses. The world wasn't winning anymore. The world system. So now, Moses, what'd you do, Pharaoh? Well, we gave up and we said for them to go. We said for them to run. To get out of here. Up and picking up if I can in, verse 32. And take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people, that they might send them out of the land in haste. And they said, we be all dead men if you don't go. Get out of here before your God kills us all. So now the people are able to enjoy being set free from the power of Pharaoh. But they aren't enjoying that. Moses is, but the people aren't. The people are going to say, you remember from last time, so the people didn't like the plagues. They wish God wouldn't have done the plagues. But God did the plagues, as you know elsewhere. He did them so that Israel would be able to report historically of the power of God in taking care of their deliverance. God said, I specifically have allowed all of this so that you will know, that Israel will know what I did in Egypt. I want to do a dramatic display of my power in Egypt, and I want it remembered. Now, keeping that in mind, so out they go of Egypt. The people are being consumed by the whole thing, but they're going. They aren't happy. But Moses is a winner. And they all go out. And remember, they're given all kinds of stuff. Verse 35. And the children of Israel that did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed or lent and took whatever they wanted without any money. Egyptian jewels of silver, jewels of gold, raiment, and the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, verse 36, so that they lent or gave them unto them such things as they require, and they spoiled the Egyptians. In other words, they were like an army that beat the Egyptians, and the Egyptians lost it, whatever they had to lose. Now, out they go, and in the process of going out, they're going to go. And you'd say, well, now the Pharaoh quit. No, Pharaoh didn't quit, remember. And over in chapter 14, picking up, now what are you going to do, Pharaoh? Well, they all go out, and Pharaoh finds them going where they're going, and he's going to go after them. In verse 14:3, and Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. In other words, they're trapped out there. And I will harden, God said, Pharaoh's heart. And what's he going to do? I shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, and the Egyptians, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord, and they did so. So out they go, and they take, and remember now quickly to get the idea, verse 7, and he took 600 chosen chariots, yea, all the chariots of Egypt, and the captains over every one of them. He took his prime army, his chief army, his powerful, everything he could get his hands on at that moment, and it sent out after them, into the thing. So now Moses, are you being consumed? Nope, I'm a consumer. The people of Israel, are you being consumed? Well, yeah, we don't want to go, but we're going, and we got all these goodies that we never had. So here we are carrying gold and silver and jewels and everything else that we never had in our life, and we're going. But we aren't happy in the other aspects of it. And then come to find out, we get down by the Red Sea, and there's nowhere to go, And then we look up, and the lookout says, whoops, here comes the Egyptian army. Egyptian army's coming. Now, is Israel a consumer? Nope, nope. Moses is, but Israel isn't a consumer. Israel is being consumed by the fear. And they haven't gone out yet. They're afraid. They're afraid. It's eating them up. It's taking away. It's robbing them of the wonderful contentment and their relationship to God. And they weren't enjoying, using our terms, New Testament, being more than a conqueror. They weren't enjoying being more than a conqueror. They were being clipped, and there they go. So now they're going, and they go, and if I can, over in chapter 14 and in verse 9, and the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pahiroth before Baal Zephon. And here they are. Here comes Moses. Here comes Pharaoh with all his stuff. And in the process, they're looking. And what are you going to do? They can't go on the Red Sea, and the mountains around us. We can't run through them. And the Egyptians have got us. We're doomed. And in the process, of course, that wasn't going to be true. Moses, are you afraid? No. Moses, are you worried? No. And what did God do? You know, without turning there, what did God do? Well, he took a cloud, fire, and he took it out there. And here comes the army of Pharaoh. And God puts blockage. He blocked them just like this. And they stopped. And on their side, it was very, very dark. It was light, but it had become very dark. And they couldn't see. But on the other side of the wall, it was where Israel was, it was very light, and they could see. And God said, chapter 14, and remember now, just so you pick, you know the flavor of all this, chapter 14, verse 12, is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? Remember, they're worried about the Egyptians getting them, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto them, the people, fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians, whom you have seen today, here they come. See the dust in the air. You shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. Pharaoh is not going to consume. The will of God is not going to do a thing to God. Pharaoh, you're a loser. You're going against God. As the nation, the people, they're afraid. Moses, you are not going to be consumed if you're going to be a leader. You have to be a winner. You want to be a winner. So when it's all losing, someone has to stand up and win and be a winner. Moses, you're a winner. He is. And God uses them in a wonderful way. And they cross the Red Sea. And you know they do all that and get across. But I want you to know that God isn't being consumed. One. Moses trusting God isn't being consumed. Pharaoh not trusting God is consumed. Red Sea. The people not trusting God are consumed, fearing and worrying about all kinds of things instead of looking and enjoying, experiencing, at being educated about God, a wonderful Savior. God, you are something else, as we say. They weren't learning that at all. So now, having said that little bit for illustration, and so reminding ourselves that education Education comes, I'll read verse 20 if I mentioned it. And it came to between the camp of the Egyptians, chapter 14, verse 20, of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud of darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all night. So during the blockage, the night continued from the day, and Israel had all night to cross the Red Sea. So you can just imagine how wide it opened up, and boom, 4.5 miles across, I think. Wow. I got to tell you. Now, having said that, and reminding ourselves that education, God's educating, that God's a consumer, and God expects you to exercise His wonderful will and be a consumer also, so that you are not consumed by everything in life, so that you're governed and guided by everything and everyone except God. God is the Savior. God is the Sovereign. So education comes very slow to the Israelites, to say the least. And learning is not a fast process. You have to go through slowly. Now, you would recall, just moving quickly, remember we did Elijah a little bit ago. And Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 17, Elijah with a widow woman from Zarephath. And what did he do? For 3 years, 3 years, more or less, plus or minus 3 years, they lived off the barrel of meal that never emptied. They consumed it. It didn't consume them. They consumed they kept taking out of the barrel, and they kept taking it. Did they stop being consumers? They stayed consumers for 3 plus or minus years. Wow. God, did Elijah learn? Oh, Elijah's a good student. And the widow woman, well, she had to learn too about God, a wonderful God. We assume he just kept doing that for her. So now, having said that, and then you want to go in the light of that, thinking of that, and God, remember, God kept Israel for 40 years. In the wilderness, he cared and kept them. Was God consumed by any of the problems? Was Moses and Caleb? And no, they weren't consumed. But the people were. They should have enjoyed, as we started out in the beginning to tell you. Now, over, if you would please, to Daniel and chapter 3. Learning this is hard because you have to go through And things that seem like that you should be overwhelmed and no one else seems to win. So why should I win? Well, because if you're going to trust God, you have to win. So here, remember, in Daniel chapter 3, and you'll remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they are there. And the people are all down, idolatry, back to Jeremiah chapter 10, we're going to. And idolatry, and they're all down, bowing down in the plain of Dura to the idol, that image, idol put up by Nebuchadnezzar. And they're all bowing down, but these three aren't bowing down at all, not bowing down. Daniel wasn't even there to bow or not bow. He didn't even go. He said, "You keep your religious service." And off they went. Now, in the process, so here's the three of them. And I'm interested in the consuming, the idolatry, the idol consumed thousands of people and nations, not just Babylon. They all yielded. They all yielded to his government, his ways, just like the Israelites had to do to the Egyptians, they had to do to Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. So the government is doing everything. We can't enjoy the benefits of being knowing God. So now, here they are, and what are they going to do, as you know and remember? Sliding down, verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, 3 and 16, answered and said, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner." Your God, who is the end of verse 15, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? No one. And then down verse 16, the end, we're not going to be careful to play politics with you. We're just going to tell you the way it is. Verse 17, if so be that our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we shall not serve, N-O-T, not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. We are not consumed by you or your system. We are not. We're going to look to God, and we're going to be consumers. And being consumers, it may mean that we may not make it. But we are going to be consumers, even if we're consumed. Even if we're consumed, we're going to win. Even if you kill me, we win. We aren't going to lose. We understand it. Do you understand when Christ was crucified? He was going to die, literally die dead. And he was a winner. He was a winner all the way to the end. So when he died, he still won. He was winning all the while he died. Well, hang on. So now, here they are going, and they're thrown in the fire, as you know, God in His wonderful grace, they go in the fire, and you'd think they'd be it, like the men who threw them in would die, let alone the people that go into the fire like them. But they didn't die. They didn't die. And you'll remember now. Very quickly, to do it. Verse 23, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the fiery furnace, because they're all bound, and they get the ropes off and stuff. And then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astonished and rose in haste to spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said unto the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like unto the Son of God. So I see four now. I see four. And you know what he does. He invites them all out, and the three of them come out, and the three of them come out, and there's no, I'll read it instead of trying to say it. In verse 27, and the princes and governors and captains and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men, witnesses, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair. Just, you have to think, you have to understand, there's not a hair singed. Not a hair singed, neither were their coats changed, nor any smell of fire had passed in them. And what are you going to say, Nebuchadnezzar? There's no God like you. There's no God like your God. You're consumers. That's right. You can't consume consumers. Consumers consume. Consumers look for the will of God, and they're going to go for the will of God, and God's going to do the will of God, and they'll win. No matter how it looks, even if it looks like you died, you win in the will of God. Remember, work out your own salvation with what? Fear and trembling. And the reason you're going to do so, why am I doing it every day? Because it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of His good pleasure. And so once that's all I want, God. God, you can do whatever you want. And He does. But you win. You're a consumer. You're consuming. School, work, home. Instead of it all gobbling us up and taking us on a journey that we wish we didn't have to take. Now, over. Isaiah chapter 60. Isaiah, looking to the millennial reign of Christ, when the temple is built, millennial temple in the kingdom, when the Lord Jesus Christ is reigning, comes again. And in the process, they're going to build the temple, millennial temple. And in verse 13, and the glory of Lebanon, 60 and 13, looking ahead into the great future. And the glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, the box, together. To what's the purpose of all the wood, this very beautiful wood, to build a very, very special temple. And to beautify the place of my sanctuary. It's my temple. And my temple. And I will make the place of my feet glorious. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to run. My throne is going to operate from the temple. I'm going to run the world, the universes, from the temple. And the place of my feet is in this temple. You're going to just think of a throne, and where do you put your feet down? In the sanctuary floor. This is my place. My place. Now remember what you had with Moses. Moses, you're at the bush, and God said, this is holy ground. Take off your shoes. God is there. Now, God, what are you going to do in the millennium that's like that? I'm going to tell you that I am going to sit. I'm going to operate, among other things, places. I'm going to operate from the temple, and that's the place of my feet where I sit. I stand there in all of my majesty and mercy. I stand there. Now, and now you do. Now, Moses, back to Moses, it's holy ground. Back to Isaiah 60, verse 14. The sons also of them that afflicted thee, all the families historically, the countries, Assyria and all of them, all the people that have grown up through the tribulation that have survived, what are they going to do? All these nations that represent our representative. Verse 14, the sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet, and they shall call thee, you're going to call, remember, they're all coming in submission. Why so? Because the place is holy ground, and if you want to come and get Moses, he's on holy ground. Yeah, he's a consumer. You aren't going to get him. You're crazy if you're going to come after him. The wrong guy, wrong time. And so now, here, in verse 1, in the millennium, God, you're going to be sitting there, and all of Israel, Jerusalem, Israel, is going to be there. Nations are going to come in submission, and they're going to come and bow down to your feet. Why? The end of verse 14. And they shall call thee. How do they understand? Why bow down to the Israelites in Jerusalem? Because, what are you going to call them? Assyria, Babylon, America, the rest of them. The city of the Lord, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. You guys are on holy ground. You guys are holy. God has made you consumers. And we're consumed. We yield to your government, to your guidance. The heart may not want to, but we have no choice. God rules with a rod of iron. We're bowing down. And we're going to recognize where your feet are. Your feet are on holy ground. The city is holy. Every dish and spoon in the city is holy. You are holy. Wow. Now, God, here we are, and we want to try at least it oh so much now, but I hope you got a little bit. I want to have to get you this far to get to the next thing. Now, you get that part so far? Consumers. And Israel is going to be wonderfully consumers in the future. And Israel didn't learn well, and they're being consumed right now. They're trying not to be consumed. They're doing their best. But it's very difficult. And how do you know they're going to be consumed? Because they're going to sign a treaty with the Antichrist. That's consuming. That's surrender. Wow. So now, Over, if you would, please. Oh, for time, we got to go time. Over to two places. I wish I could do more. But over in, what you tell me? Colossians. Colossians chapter 1. Now you want to be, I'm trying to stimulate your mind and your heart to be consuming, not consumed. That's what I'm trying to help you. So in your each of you got your own world, your own things, every day, school, homework, easy, hard, health, wealth. You got all of this stuff you have to do, and you have to go. So you want to go as a movement in a way that helps you understand you're a winner. You're a winner. You may not know how yet, but you want to start off. You're more than a conqueror because of him. So that's the beginning. You have to learn it. Now, Colossians, you know, 2 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. Your body is the temple of whom? God the Holy Spirit. Right? Temple. Now, remember the temple of the millennium? So that you think of that. I mean, if I could be a Jew back then in that time, whoo, what a privilege that would be. But I'm way ahead of that. So are you. Way ahead of that. Woo. Now, so God, our bodies are temples. The church body's a temple. Individual believers are a temple, God. And the temple, what do you do in the temple? Well, in the temple, Colossians 1:27, you know, to know what the mystery, riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is, 1:27, Christ in you, the hope of glory. Do you understand? Where my feet are is holy ground. Where I am is holy ground. Therefore, we read in Peter and all of it, be ye holy for what? I am holy. That's why. It's holy ground. Holy ground. You mean that? Yes, that's true. I'm trying to tell you. Moses, it's all Israel, but Moses had to go through what to learn it? And Israel, but boy, we got it so much easier. It's harder to understand it. Heaven, oh, wow. So now, Christ in you, the hope of glory. So God, you mean, so now I got to go quickly over to Ephesians. God gives you all these wonderful epistles so you know what's going on. Ephesians chapter 1, picking in verse 22. And hath put all things under his feet. God the Father hath put everything under the feet of Christ. Under the feet of Christ, where the place of my feet is holy ground. Hmm. Yeah. Glorious ground. So now, and God the Father hath put all things under the feet of the perfect Son of Man, and gave him to be the head over all things to the church, that's us, believers, body, which is his body, verse 23, the fullness of him that filleth all in all. So God, are we your feet? No. We're like your feet, but we aren't. We're part of the body, which includes the feet. And what? We stand, Christ in you, the hope of glory. And God said, the place of my feet, where I am, is holy. And I want you to know that everything and everyone in all of forever, even though you don't understand it at this point, you can't experience at this point. Right now, the God who saves you, the Lord who died for you, all of the angels, including the devil himself, wherever he is in forever out here, is in submission to him in your heart. So why do we allow ourselves to be consumed when we're consumers? The place of my feet. And you know, here's Ephesians, right? Ephesians 1:12. That we should be to the praise of his glory, who first trusted in Christ. God, whatever you eat or drink, or whatever you do what? To what? To the glory of God. See, we're back. How can that be? Because you're consumers. You consume. And everything that comes and say, boy, that's, well, it is awful. It's horrible. But, God, in your wonderful outworking, we're going to trust you for your goodwill. And if no temptation, trial has taken to put us to the proof. So God, if it comes our way, 1 Corinthians 10, 13, then we can handle it. And God, we're going to trust you in it. So we could be losers, look like terrible losers, but all the time we're winners. Because we're looking to you. And you can, as you know, all these wonderful things. God said, you learn to trust me by me taking away everything that you have and making you poor. And the same time, I make you rich. You learn by hard knocks. You learn in the good things I do, and you abound. And I do the allow other things, and you don't abound. That's how you learn to trust me. You're a consumer. Be a consumer. And you're going to learn to do it. That's how you do it. And God, it's an awesome thing. Wow. Wow. I got to quit. I hope you got a little bit. And it, Moses, Israel didn't get this. How much of the church do you think understands that, what we just did? How many believers do you know that even come, that understand it and practice it? How many? You see. Now, all I know is God, we're given the privilege, and I can't answer for anyone. I have to work out my own fumbling, bumbling salvation, and that isn't bumbling, but God, and you have to work out yours, and you are absolutely have full authority to do so. And you, therefore, I don't care what you're up against. You ought to be not being consumed by it. You ought to be a consumed by it. You ought to consume it. That's what you want to do. Be a consumer. And letting everything turn around to the glory of God. No matter how awful anything is. And I wonder what kind of experience you would have as you learn to actually do that. Not just talk about it. Do it. And then you can't have the experience without the exercise. True? And you can't have the enjoyment of the exercise and the experience unless you do it. So that's why believers are so, because they never get there. It's a wonderful thing to be a winner. And God didn't make it because you or I are special. We're great. We aren't. But God is. So, you may have a particular request of prayer. Remember the ISIS and all the other stuff.